to tell or write your own stories. Anybody here like to write or tell their own stories? Thank you. I have a second question for everybody. Raise your hand if you like to draw pictures or illustrate your own stories. Anybody here like to draw? Good, great. And finally, I have one last question for you. Raise your hand, both children and grown-ups, if you like to make stories together. Anybody here like to make a story? With their parents or with their child or their grandparent? Fabulous. Well, everyone came to the right place today. We have two very special guests with us, and they indeed like to create stories with one another. They're going to share their newest book today called Don't Go Sleep. First is Kate Pfeiffer, who is a writer, a filmmaker, and a mother. Joining her is her father, Jules Pfeiffer, who has many titles, a cartoonist, a novelist, a screenwriter, and also an author and illustrator of children's books. So please join me in welcoming Jules and Kate Pfeiffer.
I love coming to the New York Society Library. It's my favorite library, one of my favorite libraries. Certainly, just love it here. In fact, there's a mention of the New York Society Library in this book that comes out in May. But that's not why we're here today. So I'm Kate.
It's why I'm here today, because the only way she won't show me her books. The books I don't illustrate, I never get to see. So the only way I can get to see this book is to sneak in here and find this copy, and I'll have to steal it before I can read it, because she's embarrassed to show me.
It's a process, as we're going to talk about today. So, the process for us working together began with him. This handsome fellow is Henry.
What?
You see? This is Henry in pink. We decided not to do Henry in pink together because I had already done a book about pink. This is Henry getting his close-up. And this is Henry. Who can tell me something rather unusual, a little odd about Henry? Yes. He does not have a tail. And Henry's lack of tail inspired me to write a story about a dog who doesn't have a tail. Because I would look at Henry, and Henry would look at me, and I'd be thinking, I wonder if he's happy he doesn't have a tail, or if he wants a tail. Does he look at all the other dogs and thinking, man, they are so lucky they just get to wag away all day long and I get to sit here with nothing to do? Or is he sitting there thinking, you know what? I am the luckiest dog in the world because no one is ever going to step on my tail.
The luckiest dog.
You luckiest dog? Well, I think the other day we took a walk, Henry and I and some friends and their dog took a walk with a dog whose tail was all wrapped up in bandages. And I think he was feeling pretty lucky that day. His tail will never be wrapped up in bandages. So I wrote the story about Henry thinking maybe he wasn't feeling like the luckiest dog, but Henry who wanted a tail and decided to go out and get a tail. And my father, who's here, has illustrated a whole bunch of books.
The one who doesn't get this book.
What's that look like? Does that look just like Henry?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a good job, right? You want to see the first drawing he did of this book, the first time he sketched Henry?
Yes.
I'll do it.
What do you think?
Pretty good.
You think? I don't know. I wasn't terribly impressed, I have to say. What about this one? Well, this is what I was feeling after I saw those two. I was a little nervous. Then he came up with this. It's getting better, right? Yeah, it's getting better. You know what I feel? And then, wow.
He's so sad.
He is sad because he wants a tail there. You're absolutely right. He's looking at the other dogs in this picture. The other dogs that have tails. And I'm going to let him talk a little bit now about how he gets from this, his sketches, to the beautiful drawing. That's Henry and the other, his friends, talking to Pip, who can do tricks with her tail. Pip, would you like to talk a little bit about drawing Henry? Or do you just want to read this? I'm done for now.
Let me talk about this book. Well, up until I drew Henry, it was a real dog. I had never actually done a real dog. The closest I came to dogs, I did a book some years ago, and it starred this dog as a cartoon dog. The cartoon dogs are easy, you do them in 10 seconds. This is a dog named George who didn't know how to bark. And that was a lot of fun to do because I didn't have to really learn how to draw a dog. But Henry was an actual dog. And the story that came to me was that Blue Charming not only had Henry in it, it had other dogs in it, all Henry's friends, who were actual dogs that hung around Henry up on Mother's Vineyard where Kate lived, and where I lived in the summers at the time. And so I not only couldn't draw Henry, I couldn't draw any of his other dogs, and I had to get pictures of Henry. I asked Henry to pose, and he wasn't very good at it. So I asked Kate to take some movies, and I put them on pause, and I did sketches. And then I went to the local library on Mother's Vineyard, the West Kingsbury Library, and I got every book they had on dogs. And I just drew and drew and drew and drew until I felt better at drawing dogs, and finally I knew how to draw Henry, but I don't know if that was a couple of years ago, I don't know if I should still do it. Let's see. The thing about Henry is he's very soulful, and he has all his hair. And I'm sensitive about creatures who have a lot of hair. It's quite an adjustment for me to make to believe that we belong in the world. I couldn't do that a couple of years ago. But Henry did that for me. And then, because Paula happened to get an idea for a book about the first 100 days of President Obama and then buying Sasha a dog, suddenly there was another dog in the movie.
Let me see. Now we have a little video for this, and let's see.
Before that, let's get to how it all came. Paul called up Kate and said, "What do you think of a book about getting a dog?" This is Paul Weissman here, who publishes Kate's books and the various things gets me involved with. And Kate said, "That was wonderful." And she said, "We need a manuscript in 2 days because we need the book out before the end of the first 100 days. So it has to be done right away." And Kate called me up and said, "Can you illustrate a book?" And I said, "No, I'm busy, I'm dead." So they went to other illustrators. And they said no. And other illustrators said no. And then other illustrators said no. And so she came back to me. I heard these stories. And she didn't actually ask me, but I said, "Okay, I guess I have to do that inside the other book." And here we are.
Wait, we're all over the place here. Close your eyes for a minute.
So I ended up doing my second book with Kate.
Wait, you're so far ahead of us. Okay.
Now you want to get into your other production?
Can we go to moving?
Which is so much more interesting than me shooting my mouth over?
No, of course not, Father.
Okay. I'm just sitting there saying that. That's interesting.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I love you both more than you can imagine. And you have earned the new puppy that's coming with us to the White House.
My name is Kate Pfeiffer.
How's it going?
Well, there's the lithograph I did, and here's the finish.
Oh, how's it going?
This is my father, Jules Pfeiffer. We're working on a book together called Which Puppy. The book is about which puppy will get chosen to go to the White House. Our editor, Paula Wiseman, didn't give my father much time.
We told Jules he had to have it done in 14 days.
My father moved to Martha's Vineyard Island for the month of January to draw. I live on the island, and my father has a charming old summer house here. He insisted on staying in his house.
I was working downstairs all bundled up at my drawing table.
He drew and drew and drew. While he drew, I worried. Worried that he'd freeze to death, he'd slip on the ice, or that he'd catch a cold. At the end of the month, when it was clear that he didn't slip or fall or freeze to death, when it was clear that the book was going to be beautiful, I asked him how many dogs he thought he had drawn.
I think over 100, and they all look like this. I wanted the dogs to look expressive, the best you worked in the morning thing in terms of the emotions of the dog, in terms of the story. How are the dogs supposed to be feeling at this particular point, and their expression show that? And I want to have fun. Doing this was a lot of fun.
Hello, I'm Lizzie. I'm working on the book. And the art just came in. And we gave Jules all the time in the world. And now I have 1 week to design the book. So I have to get out of my office. I have to get back to work. I have no time.
So that's what I look like after my father came. So stressed out. He aged me. And he had a great time though.
Now you can talk about
what's that?
The drawing you see up there is how the way these books begin. Once the script is written, once the Kate writes the story and the book falls off the table, I take the script and I break it down, or start to break it down into pages. What lines will go on what page? And the book has to be essentially, most of these books start on page 5, sometimes on page 3. The books are 32 pages and then it's front matter. So you have a limited number of pages to do the drawings in and tell the story in. And my job is not just to do the pictures, but to think how best the story is going to work and what kind of illustrations. And so I select lines to go to move the story forward. And in my own head, it's something like a storyboard of a movie. It's all about pushing the story forward and having the reader turn the pages wanting to know what happens next. And that's not just having an interesting picture, but it's an interesting picture connected with the text that makes you want to read both of them. And as a cartoonist all my life, working in comic strips, the notion of words and pictures working together in tandem has always been natural to me from the time I was a little boy. And so it's the way I think. That to a reader, as they go through these books, you shouldn't make the distinction between one and the other. They can come together. They take the pieces of an orchestra work together. And so to make that work at the beginning, you put together something called a dummy. which is a very rough sketch of how the book is going to look after the drawing is finished, after it's in color. But this is basically how a thinking process. This is all about thought and how it's going to look. And I did that. And I keep doing it until I get it right.
There's another sketch from the book. Can you guys see that? Sorry, Mike. This was a roly-poly wise dog.
Which doesn't exist. I had to make up a roly-poly dog.
That was my gift to you. This is the last page in the book as he imagined it at first, and then the way it came out in the final book.
And that's the dog who could go back with me. I could not resist that last dog. Go back one. No, go for it. Well, then maybe the White House. Yeah, that's one. This dog is a heart-shaped dog, and I modeled that dog, if you notice he has one eye, after my dog, Lily, who is a combination chihuahua and something else. And has one eye. We got when she was 3 years old, and you don't know how she got the one eye. She came from Tennessee, and she probably got from some kind of country bar brawl. So,
so our third book together that we did came from a story that happened. It was a true story that happened during my childhood and his not childhood. And we were driving to a wildlife sanctuary. And we're about halfway there, and my father, I'm in the back seat.
This is
me, and that's my dad.
That used to be me.
And that used to be me. Now that's my daughter. He says to me, "We can't go, it's raining." And I look out my window and I say, "Well, it's not raining on my side of the car." And he keeps driving, and I'm not gonna let anything stop us from going on this trip. Not even his claims that it's raining, but I knew full well that it wasn't raining, because it wasn't raining on my side of the car. Mm-hmm. That's the cover of our third book together, and I just have a few slides from this. Nothing was going to stop them getting to the zoo, not even an escape tiger. And here goes raining on Dad's side of the car, but on Sadie, the little girl's side of the car, there's so little rain that people on her side of the car are actually watering their lawns. And this is the reason we're here today. No Go Sleep is our fourth collaboration. And this book, which is this book, which we're going to read to you, just came out March 6th, just very, you know, last week, 10 days ago. Lovely.
The way this happened, purely by accident, I was, I had not written one of my own children's books in some time, and I was looking through my file, which is a kid, just a kid's eye, and it has ideas and notes, and I thought, well, maybe I can do something out, because it's about time I wrote something again. I wanted to put together my own book, and I found, right in the middle of it, this typed manuscript, which I didn't recognize. I don't type, I write everything along that. So I knew it wasn't mine. And I started reading it, and I didn't remember what it was, but I thought quickly that the only piece of writing I'm having here wouldn't be by anybody except for Kate. So she must have written this, but somewhere in the back of my head, I realized that this was something that she did before she was officially a children's book author, before she did Double Think. And she must have sent me the idea, and I read it, and we talked about it, and nothing ever happened. And when I read the story, I didn't know why nothing happened, because I thought it was absolutely charming. So without telling Kate, I sat down and turned it into a 32-page dummy that looked like the ones I just showed you, the scrolling was about the parents trying to put the baby to sleep, and the baby doesn't want to go to sleep, and all the things that are imagined in the process of putting the baby to sleep. And I sent it to her without saying any, you know, a word, and with the type manuscript. And she called up astonished. She didn't remember it at all. And she said, "What is it?"
I remember writing it. No. It was this great gift. I do, of course, I remember writing, but it was this great gift to open the mail and see this story I had written when my child was refusing to go to sleep years ago, because Well,
she's so confused. You weren't sure that was any good. And I was sure that it was just a lovely, lovely idea and could be another good night moon and with some doubt.
With your help?
She sent it out to Paula Washington over here. And Paula loved it. And I said to Paula at the time, I'm not sure I'm the right illustrator for this book because the book needs innocence and sweetness, and these are qualities I'm not known for. better known for overthrowing governments. But she thought I was the right person to do the book, and
she was right.
So I pretended to an innocence and the sweetness, and fooled myself, and I hope fooled the readers.
So this being No Go Sleep, sort of unofficial birthday, this is our launch for this book. You guys want to hear it? Be the first ones. All right. So I'm going to go back here. No Go Sleep. Dad, do you want to read it? One night, when the stars were out and the moon was bright, a baby said, "No, go sleep." And the baby's mommy said, "It's time for you to close your eyes and think sweet thoughts." And the baby's daddy said, "Put your head down and fall fast asleep." And the sun said, "I've gone for the day. When you wake up, I'll be back to play." And the moon said, "Don't be scared. I'll keep the night light for you." And the star said, "We will twinkle and sprinkle sweet dreams down to you." And a car driving by said, "Beep, beep, sleep, sleep." And the bird said, "We'll sing you a song." And the frog said, "We'll croak the chorus." And the bunny said, "We'll be listening." And the owl said, "Ooh, yes me, I'll stay awake and watch over you." And the tree said, "Close your eyes and listen to the bustle of my rustle." And the sheep said, "Count us, 1, 2, 3, and you'll fall asleep." And the front door said, "I am closed until morning." And the goldfish said, "We won't swim away." The dog said nothing. He was too sleepy. And the shoe said, "We're just too tired to walk another step. Good night." And the doll said, "I have my jammies on." And the teddy bear said, "It's time to snuggle." And the mommy said, "Please go to sleep." And the baby said, "No." That's what the mommy thought too. And closed both eyes and fell asleep. Night night, sweet dreams. So any child or adult, because you know, it seems like when you're young, sometimes it's hard to fall asleep, and then when you get a little older, like my age, it's hard to fall asleep again. So if you read this book, you will assuredly fall asleep. Spread the word.
I'm getting tired.
Here, you see? Okay, who here fell asleep? This is great, the only, all right, thank you. So, do you have anything to say about?
Well, this was in some ways the hardest and most satisfactory book of illustration I've done of all the books I've done, because it was forced me to think in terms of simplicity and innocence and kind of reduce not just the story but the feeling behind the story. To essence, and if you look at these drawings, and these are the early scrolls, it takes one back to one's own childhood, and then scribbles you made, thinking you were doing drawings. In some cases, you are doing drawings. In some cases, they're a lot better than the drawings you do 2 or 3 years later. I used to say that it took me 30 years to get back to being as good an artist as I was at 7. Because the intervening years of education destroyed what I had. And it's been relearning how to draw simply and directly and cut to essence. That's in essence the story of my work as a children's illustrator, which makes it so satisfying for me, because as a kid, what I loved most, what I valued most, were the Sunday supplements of the newspapers, which involved sometimes 16 pages of comics, huge size, of broadsheets, because this was the 1930s and early 40s. And there was one cartoon on a page, usually with a teaser strip at the top. So it wasn't the way it is today, where you get a page on a broadsheet and there are 6 stunt cartoons on the page, stunt strips, and maybe 8. And you can't really tell anything what's going on, and there's no room for the artwork. But the artwork that I used to see is in this essentially black and white world of the Great Depression. The movies were in black and white, and there was no television, just radio. And nothing digital, and nothing of the great format came with the comics. And particularly the Sunday color comics. And they were magical to me. And to have the opportunity, as an old man, to return to the form I loved as a fan, and as a dreamer of becoming a cartoonist when I was 6, 7, 8, 9, and now be able to do it professionally and bring back all of those memories. It's a wonderful way of going full circle and returning to truly what I enjoyed most as a kid, you know, outside of movies and radio, but something, but very little of life, which was pretty black and white and pretty gray. It's a continual joy to do these books, because they complete a circle that that I find very satisfying and causes great happiness whenever I'm working on it. And I keep learning how to do it. I keep doing things for the first time, and I keep figuring out how to do it. Or not so much figuring out, they just happen, and that's nice. That accidents happen, that is so wonderful. So it's a glorious opportunity, and I'm grateful to Paul and all the other editors I've worked with who allowed me to basically play in public all these years.
Do you guys have any questions? Yes, Nikki.
Did I hear correctly that this book actually came before Devil Pink, the copy for this?
I wrote this book one of many, many long nights.
And you've written how many books now?
I
still can count. 6.
10, 11.
11 books. 11. Okay. So in other words, you were working on becoming a children's writer, and you took this first idea, and you sent it to your dad as a possibility for doing the book, but...
I think I probably sent it to him, not with the thinking of him illustrating it, more as a, what do you think?
What do you think of the copy?
Right.
And is it a possibility? But it was another 5 years before you actually collaborated, right?
She was not a Jewish book author at the time, so right. The idea of me illustrating it would, you know, it never came up. It was just, do you think this is any good? And I said no. And
he put it in a drawer. And he put it in a drawer.
So how long was it before the two of you did end up collaborating?
Oh, over 10 years, I think.
Well, no.
20 years.
Henry was published in 2007, so we probably started working on it around 2005, or 2004, 2005. Maddie was born in 1998, so I probably wrote this book during the sleep-deprived years following that. So there were 3 or 4 years before I, 5 years maybe.
And did some interim filmmaking work.
I did some interim filmmaking work, yes.
And, okay. So I didn't know that chronology.
Nikki, what used to be in my writer's group, didn't write this vineyard. So, did I not read that story to group?
I don't think you read that group. One. I think you were working on some children. This is a little bit of history of Kate Pfeiffer, because she won't tell you. You were doing some children's education in terms of, and then you were working on Mox and Mistletoe, which is a fabulous film, if you haven't seen it, about the the combination of integrated marriages, or shall we say bipartisan marriages, and then went on to children's books. This is a short history of Kate Butler.
Thank you. She's my publicist and biographer. So thanks, Nikki. So any other questions? Yes.
When you were a child, did you think about being a writer or illustrator, just given lesson and what you were growing up with, or was it?
No, I didn't. I think I, well, it wasn't not an interest. I just, I think I was, well, as a child, I liked to write and I liked to draw. And we used to do cartoon strips together where he did one panel and I did one panel and we did one panel. But I think as I got older and started thinking, what do I want to do? I think there was too much baggage for me being his daughter to want to go down that path. And then I moved to an island. And suddenly baggage, I had a child and all that baggage didn't matter. And suddenly it's like, oh, you can do what you want to do because there are no other jobs for you here anyway. So. So. Any other questions? Yes.
Other than your own, which is your favorite children's book?
Other than my own, which is my favorite? Well, I don't think, oh boy, that's tough.
Your father?
Oh, yes. Other than his and I. Oh, that's tough. There's so many amazing ones. The one that came, and I don't know if this is my favorite, but the one that popped into my head, and it is The Giving Tree, but I don't know if that's my favorite. There's just so many. I'm not good with favorites, but there's incredible books out there. The Big Bad Strawberry, what's that book? They're just, I'm not going to answer this effectively. Dad, do you have a favorite children's book?
Picture books, forgive me, I forget the name of the book, but what is it? No.
No Go Sleep?
No. The kid, the No.
David.
I think that's an absolutely brilliant book, and it works every time I look at it. And for, you know, the somewhat older children, like the parents, I think the classic, and one of the great books I've written for children or anybody is Charles Webb, which affects me every time I look at it. And I once happened to listen to an NPR recording of E.B. White reciting the book, I just quoted at the end, and when he gives the last line of the book, I broke down.
Yes, Paul? Have your ancestors' family members ever appeared in your or your dad's books?
Have, well, other than Henry.
Other than him?
Yes. Well, my daughter, Maddie, who is passionate about the color pink, inspired my first book, Double Pink. When I started, the day when she asked me if she could change her name to Pink, then I started getting truly worried, and I thought I wanted to write a story about a girl who takes her love of pink too far. But Bark George, in my father's book, Bark George, there's a picture at the very end of the book. So he had written Bark George, Maddie was born, and there's a picture at the very end of the book where he's pushing us, where I'm in it, there's a crowd scene walking down Broadway, and there's a crowd scene, and I'm pushing a stroller, very pregnant. So anticipating child number two, which we never got, grandchild number two. But also, his book, The Daddy Mountain, was inspired by my husband and daughter, The Daddy Mountain.
We were on a family vacation, I guess it was Dominican Republic, and Chris, Kate's husband was in a pool with Matt at the shallow end, of course. And he was standing there, lounging, watching her. And she insisted that he put out her hand, but she didn't start the closet. And she gave him instructions because he wasn't doing it right. And I sat there marveling at this tiny little thing, ordering her, very powerful looking, muscular father around. And him complied completely to every one of her demands, and I thought, this is a book, a how-to climb your father book. An instructional guide, a manual for three-year-olds. This is the way you go about climbing your old man. So I just, the story of the book is we had drilled that we met is basically in the first person talking and telling all the other little children how to climb your pole. And which involves a number of accidents. Things going wrong, but she persists until she gets to the top when her mother comes into the room gate and Lily passes out cold at the thing this tiny child astride standing on her father's shoulder.
Now, it might be fun for, can anyone here think of, now that we've read No Go Sleep, anyone here like to draw?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I like to scale.
So who else might have helped the baby fall asleep? Anyone have an idea? Because we can keep writing this book. What's your idea?
The mom.
The mom can?
No, maybe everyone.
Someone who already isn't in the book. Someone who isn't in the book. Anyone know? Yeah?
The chimney.
Do you want to come up and draw what a chimney would look like? Do you want my father to draw a chimney? See, will you ask if he'll draw one? Will you draw a chimney, Dad?
A chimney?
Yes, because we're going to, right here, try to pitch to Paula, No Go Sleep 2.
I don't know why we didn't think of a chimney.
You want me to draw?
A chimney.
A chimney.
Because the chimney said, I won't let anyone in on you. Or what would the chimney say?
I won't let Santa Claus come in.
Ooh.
A chimney on the house.
On the house, yes.
Ah.
Where are your chimneys?
You left out the house.
Well, I thought of those chimneys. Do you have a chimney in your yard? Yes. Where's your chimney?
There's the house. That goes with the chimney. There's a window for the house and goes with the chimney. Here's the front door. This is here's a brick that makes up the chimney. Okay.
Okay, does anyone have another idea while he's drawing the bricks? Yes.
The nightlight.
The nightlight. So then what will the nightlight say?
And here is Santa Claus who's been stuck in the chimney supply.
You have an idea for it?
Santa Claus stuck in the chimney.
Should I see if anyone else has an idea for it? Or do you have an idea? Okay, what? I'll keep the monsters away. I love that. Do you want to come draw a monster that will be kept away? No? Would you like to draw a monster?
I'd love to draw a monster. Would anybody in the room like to pose as a monster? You would. Years ago I did an illustrated book called The Phantom Toll Booth, in which I had a lot of experience writing monsters.
I like that. The nightlight says, I'll keep the monsters away. And do you have an idea? What's your idea?
How about the monster said, scare the monster away?
So the monster is also going to scare the monsters away?
No, the nightlight is going to
scare the monsters away. Do you want to draw a monster after he's done with his monster? Oh, good.
There's a monster.
Murray the monster. I don't know if monster's named Murray, but that's scary. I bet you can draw a scary monster, though.
Would you draw a monster?
She's going to draw a scary monster who isn't named Murray. So anyone else have another idea? Yes.
Well, okay, but I'll give you the idea.
I love that. The rattle says I won't make any noise. Do you want to draw a rattle? Okay. As soon as we're done with our monster. All right, good. Does anyone have any other noise? We have noise. Any other ideas?
Yes.
Her father has had a tradition of going to the library on Friday afternoons. They'd done this when they lived in Savannah and had started their routine up again without missing one Friday after they'd moved. Now they generally went to the New York Society Library, partly because it was close to school and partly because of the book dungeon. You got there by taking a rickety old elevator with a creaky gate. Have any of you been in that rickety old elevator with the creaky gate? Do you still have the rickety old elevator with the creaky gate? To Lucy, the books in the book dungeon looked, smelled, and felt more real than the books at the bookstore. She liked the biographies best. All winter long, she'd sat at a metal desk in a dimly lit corner of the book dungeon and read about Benedict Arnold. He was two-timing during the Revolutionary War, spying for the British even though he was supposed to be on our side. She read everything she could find out about him in the book dungeon. Then back home, she'd search online for samples of his handwriting, because Lucy loves handwriting. If only someone had looked at the way he wrote his D in Arnold. It flips back to the A. His letters weren't even loyal. A good D starts with itself, stays with itself. So that was a tribute to this library, which... Do you have another question? Yes. Another idea? Did you write your research notes?
Yeah.
Oh, look, those are great. Those are great, lots of notes, and that monster is getting really, really scary.
Could you tell us what your new book is about, your novel, or is that a secret?
No, it's not a secret. How nice of you to ask. So Sci-Fi Zelda, which comes out on May 1st, is about a girl who is fascinated by handwriting, a boy who is always landing himself in trouble, mostly because his dad is one of the meanest dads ever, a grandmother, the boy's grandmother, who bakes the most amazing pies, and in fact there's a pie recipe in this book, and the pie recipe is from this woman right here, who inspired this character of Zelda, who's the grandmother, after I'd written the book. I met her and I thought she reminds me of this character I just wrote, and then she says she bakes this incredible berry pie, multi-berry pie, and my character bakes what I call a multi-berry, Zelda berry pie, and it's Anne Ossibel's recipe, which I have borrowed from the back of the book, and changed it to Zelda berry pie recipe. And the grandmother goes missing, and the boy, who's always in trouble, the girl who loves handwriting, with the assistance of a very wise pigeon, try to locate the grandmother. And I'm not going to tell you if they find her or not. But they do find a note that says, help me. So, yes, you have? Oh, I love that. Do you want to? Yeah. Did you have fun? Anyone else have ideas? Yes. A rainbow? The rain cloud. Oh my gosh, have you drawn the rain cloud yet?
No.
Please, draw the rain cloud. I'm so sorry. Okay, well that's it then.